NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Welcome to the Flight Safety Detectives. I'm your host, Todd Curtis. Today we have a special episode where we're going to discuss, not we, just myself, because Greg and John aren't here today. I'm going to discuss a scene from a movie. The movie is Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and the scene in question, many of you might recognize, this is early in the movie where you have air traffic controllers speaking with a couple of airliners that are about to encounter something in the sky, and they're rapidly going back and forth trying to figure out what it was and how to avoid it. Now, I enjoyed this scene back when I saw the movie in 1977, but I really enjoyed it when I looked at the scene for the first time in several decades, about a month ago. And I thought it was very well done, very well executed, in real life, although this was supposed to depict the Indianapolis Air Route Traffic Control Center. It was actually shot in the actual L.A. Air Route Traffic Control Center. And the actors who were playing air traffic controllers did a pretty darn good job. We'll have a portion of that video in the show later on, but I wanted to talk to you about why I wanted to share that video with you. But before I do that, what I'd like to share is my thanks to all those who have become members to the Flight Safety Detectives. And those are folks who decided to take the next step, logged into our website, rather to our YouTube channel, clicked on the join button, and you became a member. And members get a lot of perks, such as early access to our episodes and other benefits to be determined later. We encourage you to support our channel by becoming YouTube members. And also, whether you become a member or not, we want you to write to us. FlightSafetyDetectives@gmail.com is our email address. Please feel free to send us questions, comments, and any other goodies you might have, for example, ideas for new shows. And for those of you who would like to sponsor our podcast, you can go to fsdsponsors@gmail.com and we can have a conversation about how we can help your product or service connect with our audience. Now back to the show. Many of you actually weren't born in 1977 or weren't really aware of aviation in 1977. You might think, what does this almost 50-year-old movie have to do with what's going on today? Well, as you know from some of our past shows, we've taken a special interest in the emerging issue of UAP and aviation safety, something that was recognized by the U.S. government some time ago. The military has a lot of formal programs in place to deal with this. As you might have recalled from some of our recent shows, the FAA actually changed their rules in the early part of this year, 2026, so that air traffic controllers are now required to report UAP activity to a particular office within the FAA. Now, without going into detail, UAP is unidentified anomalous phenomena. Could be anything from weird weather to natural phenomena that no one's ever seen before, or at least the crew hasn't seen before, to unknown vehicles flying in places they shouldn't be flying. This is not to say anything about what's behind the UAP, because by their nature, they're unknown. In decades past, it was an unwritten rule that you didn't talk about this sort of thing. That is, reporting a UAP of whatever type might have had a negative impact on your career. And again, these are unwritten rules, which I knew very well when I was working in, for example, at Boeing. Although we never had a situation when I was there where these sorts of things came across the table. But it was understood that if there was ever an event that seemed to involve a UFO, UAP, what have you, it wasn't the kind of thing that you would put into a report. Now, in the scene, which we'll have the audio of it as well as the transcript of it later on, you have a situation where two airline crews encounter something. After the encounter, the air traffic controllers ask them if they would like to report it, and both crews refuse, saying something in effect of, there's no way I'd want to report this. I don't even know where I would report it. Now, that actually reflected a reality that existed until January 2026. Before then, and you'll see this if you are looking at the video version of this show, the actual rules that the FAA had for what to do if there was a UFO slash UAP event was not to report it to the FAA or even to report it to a formal aviation organization. But the FAA's policy was to send this off to a non-FAA, non-governmental organization. Since about 2 or 3 years ago, once some formal processes were put into place in the U.S. government, the new effort was to try and get information from civil aviation and military aviation into the hands of organizations that are formally analyzing these. As you can see from looking at the screen, there's actually a change from basically, don't talk to us about it, to a specific set of information that the FAA would like to have their air traffic controllers send to a specific office in the FAA. And without going into detail, all I can say is that if you go to the webpage for this episode, you will be able to download selected portions of that document that talks about the rule change, as well as a transcript from the Close Encounters of the Third Kind movie. Now, that transcript is something that I personally did myself. I treated that scene like a cockpit voice recorder from an accident and said to myself, if I were to write this up sort of like in the style of an NTSB appendix that has a transcript of the conversation, what would it look like? And it was difficult. I had to listen to it 10 or 15 times to try and get most of the words that are being said. But it is very insightful because looking at it now, it looks as though Spielberg designed the scene to not only reflect what would happen in a real air traffic control center back in the 70s, but also to reflect the kind of thought process that might be going through someone's head if they see something they simply don't understand. At the same time when in the conversation, the air traffic controllers are giving instructions to the pilots, other air traffic controllers who gathered around the first controller were having side conversations, speculating, what could it be? Could it be this? Could it be that? We should call the Air Force and see what they have flying special over there. And this is a fairly good scene. And let me just play the scene for you. What you're going to have is not the actual clip itself, but the transcript as everyone's speaking what they're saying. This is going to give you a better chance to understand exactly what's going on in the scene. A note about the transcript that you'll see on the screen. In addition to identifying who was doing the speaking, I also gave you a time that things happened. And time zero was the time that the first person speaks in the scene. There was some background chatter, but the first of the seven characters to speak, that was time zero. Before I start the clip, let me take you through the people who have speaking roles during this. You have seven speaking roles in total, two of them involving the airliner crews from Aries 31 and TWA 517. And you have the main air traffic controller who does most of the talking, most of the communication with those two airliners, and three supervisors and another air traffic controller. Supervisor 1 is the first person you'll hear. He'll come over and tells the air traffic controller 1 to keep an eye on Aries 31. Then you'll have a controller, ATC 2, who is sitting beside the ATC-1 controller and has some side conversations with supervisor number 2. Toward the end of this clip, you'll have a third supervisor coming in and asking a couple of questions of the airliners.
134.4.
344, what's this?
Keep an eye on that point out I gave you. He's on 122.5. I'll be right back.
Indianapolis, China, do you have any traffic for Area 31?
Area 31 negative. The only traffic I have is a TWA L-1011 in your 6 o'clock position, range 15 miles. And an Allegheny DC-9 in your 12 o'clock position, 50 miles. Stand by one. I'll take a look at broadband of it.
Area 31 has traffic 2 o'clock, slightly above and descending.
Area 31, roger. I have a primary target about that position now. I have no known high altitude traffic. Stand by one. I'll check low, over. Dick, will you check low altitude and see if they know who this is?
Center Area 31. The traffic's not lower than us. 1 o'clock now, still above me and descending.
Area 31, can you say aircraft type?
Negative, Center. No distinct outline. To tell you the truth, the target is rather brilliant. That's the brightest any collision lights I think I've ever seen. Alternating white to red. The colors are a little striking.
Center, this is TWA 517. Traffic now looks like extra bright landing lights. I thought Ares had his landing lights on.
Could be a satellite.
Aries 31, I He's have a primary target now in your 10 o'clock position, 5 miles off.
I've never seen one like that.
About an SR-71?
The traffic is proceeding northeastbound, no altitude readout.
Roger, Center. Traffic's really moving. It's going to be a problem now. He's going to descend about 1,500 feet below me. Wait a second. Stand by one. Okay, Center. Aries 31, the traffic has turned. He's heading right for my windshield. We're turning right immediately and leaving flight level 350 now.
Aries 31, descend and maintain flight level 310. Break, Allegheny 444, turn right 30 degrees.
Get on the order of the 45th recon wing. See what the hell they could be testing up there.
Aries jet descending to maintain.
This is Indianapolis Center. Do you have any test operations restricted area 2508?
Aries 31, roger. The traffic is quite luminous and is exhibiting some non-ballistic motion, over.
Roger, Aries 31. Continue to descend at your discretion, over.
Okay, Center. Center pilot's discretion is approved. The traffic is approaching head-on, alter right, and really moving. And right by us, right now. Now, that was really close. Aries 31 is out of 340 on the traffic path.
Ask them if they want to report officially.
TWA 517, do you want to report a UFO? Over. TWA 517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Aries 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative, we want to report one of those either.
Aries 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind, over?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, Center.
Aries 31, me neither. I'll try to track traffic to destination, over.
This was a scene that supposedly took place in 1977, and in my opinion, this could have been 2007, 2017 even, and you would have had the same result in that the FAA didn't have a real process in place that instructed its air traffic controllers to forward a UAP report like this to a proper organization. And bringing up the change of rules and change of instruction that happened just earlier this year, just last month, in January 2026, you can see that the process before was either you call air traffic control, or rather you recommend that the pilot contact air traffic control, or send it to a non-governmental organization for further review. Whereas now, the rules are much different, very specific in what you have to do. The FAA now requires their controllers to forward the following information if there is a UAP-type event. 1. The call sign of the aircraft that reported the UAP, or otherwise the air traffic control person who reported it. That was there for both pieces of information. 2. The location, altitude, and flight direction of the reporting aircraft, or the location of the reporting air traffic personnel. Again, both pieces of information were known. 3. The UAP location in relation to the aircraft position or the air traffic personnel. This information was known as well. 4. General description of the UAP, including any known pertinent information about the altitude, direction, flight, speed. This was all known as well. They may not have had information on the shape. They just described it as some luminous object. And 5. If the UAP were depicted on the ATC radar displays. That again was true in this case.
Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
Let's shift gears from 1977 to 2024. As many of you know, there was an earlier episode, and we're flashing a screen grab from that title card. There was an earlier episode where we discussed a December 2024 event where not one but two airliners saw something unusual in the sky. Now, I won't go into detail about both airliners, but I will say for the second airliner, I was actually able to get, through a Freedom of Information Act request, the audio from the key portion of the encounter, which was over at about a 13-minute period during which this encounter took place. I only took out those parts of the tape where you had the air traffic controller and the airliner, in this case, United 2276, speaking to one another. And for those of you watching the video version of this, if you're looking at the transcript, you'll see that there's time associated with every person who was speaking. The time for the United flight was the time of the tape that I received. It was a 13.5-minute tape or so, and time zero was the beginning of the tape. And this was about 0408 in the morning, the 22nd of December, 2024. And of course, the FAA uses Zulu time rather than local time. It was actually late local time in Southern California. So time zero is the beginning of the tape. And you can see there's roughly a 2-minute gap between the first conversation the air traffic controller had with the aircraft and the second, more substantial conversation with the aircraft.
Good evening, 92786. Standing by the Hollywood 1, 250, sign on the speed.
92276, LA, Sentinel.
And United, 2276. Do you have a traffic at 9 o'clock, about 1,000 feet above us?
United, 2276, I got traffic at your 8 o'clock and 15 miles. This is the 737F-300 westbound.
Okay, we just passed something that was actually going eastbound and red and white light, pretty slow. We can't really tell what it is.
92276, roger that. Red and white lights. Do you have an estimation of size?
No, it's hard to tell, and it seemed pretty close to us and pretty slow going the other way. But size-wise, we can't really tell.
92276, roger that. What do you estimate they're about at the same altitude that you're at?
Yeah, about the same altitude, maybe a little bit higher. Definitely not a satellite, and maybe an airplane, but hard to tell.
2276, roger that. I don't have anything on my scope, but I do have my primaries on, and I was not fishing anything either.
Okay.
What struck me when I put these two together for the show is that how similar the two sounded. That is, you had a conversation back and forth. You had the sort of background noises you would get when you have a radio conversation. And it just says to me that Spielberg, back in 77, and his production crew did a very, very good job at giving a realistic depiction of what's going on. Now, as to the 787, that's a issue, that's an event, rather, that's an ongoing investigation. I happen to be involved in two organizations, one, an American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, a special group that is looking at UAP safety issues in aviation, and another is Americans for Safe Aerospace. And this event in 2024 is interesting from several perspectives, one of which is what exactly was happening there and whether or not it was a UAP. That is still something that's ongoing, and we'll talk about that in a future show. But for now, I'm just happy that I was able to bring this to you and give you an idea of what kind of work is being done as we speak to deal with UAP issues in aviation. And also tipping the hat to Steven Spielberg with yet another example of how he, as a filmmaker, was bringing realism to the movies when it comes to at least that aspect of aviation. And my second to last word is, I can't wait to have Greg and John back. And my last word, I will channel John and say that if you're out there flying, whether you're a mechanic or a pilot, flight attendant, ramp rat, whatever, keep your eyes open. Keep your head on a swivel. If you see something, don't just say something. Take action to keep things from going from potentially bad to very hazardous to an accident or an incident. I'm not going to go over again all the various things that people do or don't do that end up with things being not very happy at the end of the flight. But the best thing I can say is, whatever you're doing in aviation, if you're a pilot or a mechanic or a flight attendant or whatever, if you have a checklist, a procedure, a standard way of doing things, follow it. It's there for a reason. If you have questions about anything, ask the question, even if the person you're asking is yourself. If you have any doubts, it's much better to figure out the problem before the plane takes off than figuring out the problem once the plane is in the air. And with that, fly safe.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetothetexas@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.